All right. Thank you so much. Welcome to Community Watch and Comment for Tuesday, December 30th, 2025. I'm Parker and I'm off solo again today, but my co-host Dave Raban will be back to join us soon in the new year. Listeners, please call us right now at 202-588-0893 to speak to our guests for today. That is 202-588-0893 to speak to our guests for today. And today, this whole hour, we are joined by Prince George's County Council Chair, Crystal Orieva. So I definitely know there's some Prince Georgians out there that have so many questions. So please, please call in. The County Council governs the county specific laws and legislation and works in tandem with local and state leaders to support Prince George's County. Crystal Orieva, the representative for District 7, which holds cities such as Capitol Heights, District Heights, Seat Pleasant, Morningside, that are all incorporated, as well as Suitland, parts of Temple Hills and Oxon Hill, that are not incorporated in other parts of the District 7 county, was recently voted as the county chair at the beginning of December. Crystal Orieva, first, congratulations. And the second, please explain to our viewership, you know, what is this new role as chair, what it encompasses, and why it's important.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to have this conversation. So the chair of the council really sits in the leadership of the council, right? It's our goal to really shape the vision and the direction that the council will take for the next year, to make decisions about the leadership team, like which members serve as chair and vice chair of the different committees, the lead voice when it comes to budget negotiation. And it's really, really exciting because we have not had a representative from District 7 sit in the chair position for upwards of a decade. And so we have not had the opportunity to have someone sit in this position. So I'm really excited and thankful that I have the opportunity to serve in this capacity and really look forward to the work that, you know, I'm going to do with my colleagues.
Can you talk about just kind of that portion that you just talked about in regards to representation? Like you said that someone from your district has not been in the chair role for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. How does that impact like your district and the residents that are specifically there?
It has a huge impact when it comes to infrastructure, dollars, and having a seat at the table. That's just the reality. You know, when we had conversations about who's going to be the speaker, for example, right, in the state, and it was so monumental to have someone from Prince George's County. So we're super excited about that. Why? Because it matters when the money is being divided. And the same goes for the council. And we have seen historically that inside of the Beltway, particularly District 7, feels forgotten. It feels like, you know, we're not getting our equal share. A lot of the resources go to the northern part of the county, and sometimes they have, you know, representation. Like even sometimes they have representatives that serve 2 years back to back in the chair role, right? And so they're concentrating the investment, and some of the areas are just fighting for scraps in District 7. And so I'm excited about the work that I've been able to do to centralize resources over the last 3 years serving on the council. The first year as just a team and leadership where I got to serve in capacity as chairs of committee, then serving as vice chair, and now finally as chair. So I'm definitely excited about what lies ahead.
I think that slid into the question that I kind of had about how as chair this would affect your district. But I think maybe talking about and expounding upon what are some countywide initiatives that you'll be moving forward this year. And callers, please call us with any questions, direct questions for the chair at 202-588-0893. Again, what are some countywide initiatives that you'll be moving forward this year?
Yeah, so I'm really, really excited about my focus on universal child care. I mentioned this in my speech when I became chair, and my theme is a prototype for what is possible. Because I really feel like we should be the example across the country. It is rare that you have a jurisdiction that looks like ours, that has the wealth that we have, that is majority Black, that's majority Democrats. So what are we doing with that? You know, what example are we showing? And so having these bold conversations around key issues is a priority for me. We also know that access to childcare is a game changer when it comes to the economy. There's two ways to look at it: growing the industry of the childcare profession. And we have areas that are basically considered childcare deserts where we don't have access. So there are small businesses, right? When we look at it from the just the industry perspective. Then we also have to look at it from the ability for people to go get jobs, go continue their education. Access to childcare is the number one factor when we see people that are not in the job force. When we look at our, you know, we have unemployment rate and then the people that are actually not even going into the market. And we've seen that increase of numbers of people that are not even going into the job market. And what we've seen is childcare as being one of the top issues. It can cost a mortgage to send your child to daycare. So that's a top priority. I'm also looking at and having a conversation around early screening for delays and with a focus on autism. When we look at our school district, we're talking about an increase of 20 to 30% of our kids here in the county being diagnosed with on the autism spectrum. We historically are having kids that are being diagnosed late. We know, all studies show, that early detection and resource intervention by the age of 3 is a game changer. And if we can do that, it will change the trajectory of our young people's lives. And then economic development, that is going to be a countywide initiative for me. We cannot have the revenue be on the backs of residents and taxpayers. We have to expand our tax base. And so that is also going to be a top priority for me.
Thank you. Thank you. That's good. We have a caller. Caller, please come up. Tell us where you're from, your name, and what's your question for the council member?
My name is Robert Andrew Moses. I'm from Prince George's County. Actually, I'm in the Fort Washington area. But anyway, I'm after the councilman's heart and mind because, you know, that's what's going to determine what gets done and what doesn't get done. Moses stood on the rock. David used the rock. That rock is Jesus. He's the rock of all ages. So when we start killing people, we have to be in God's will. We need to hands off Nicaragua, hands off Venezuela, hands off Cuba. Moses went to the mountain. Jesus was the mountain. The mountain came to Muhammad, and Muhammad said, "What's love got to do with it? These Christians are oppressing and exploiting my people." So he preached the Quran. Mm-hmm. Only a fool
right.
would say
what's
there
your...
is no God.
I understand. What's your question for the
mountain?
What's your question
so
for the council member, sir?
I'm after the heart and mind of the council person.
Okay.
That's
so you're asking what's her heart and mind?
That's what's going to determine the future.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we're going to let the council member answer that in context to the heart and mind of the council member for the community and for Prince George's at large.
Yeah, I think the reason I ran is really because I had a heart for the least of these. And that's just kind of how I look at the world, right? If we center people that are suffering and in need, we really do elevate our entire community. So it's always been a focus for me because of my faith. I'm very open and honest about how God leads me in every decision that I make. And I try to make sure I center my policies and the way that I approach this job as a walking testimony to that. And I think you have to have a heart for the people in this job. And sadly, a lot of people don't have a heart for the people. There's a heart for greed and money and power and everything that is the opposite of the community. But I hope that we see shifts in that. I think with the new council, we've seen a shift with that. With our new county executive, we're seeing that shift. We're really seeing a lot of people come to this position. And I truly believe, because I get the opportunity to sit in the rooms with these people when no one's watching, that do have a heart for the people. And so I think there's a huge opportunity for us to see better and now do better.
Okay. And then caller, you can go ahead and call us at, again, 202-588-0893. Callers, you can call us at 202-588-0893 to ask the County Council Chair for Prince George's County any questions that you might have. I know that you just spoke about your countywide initiatives, specifically focusing on childcare, making it more accessible to the average Prince Georgian, and also talking about basically the revenue for the county can't be on the backs of homeowners and taxes. Can you talk about how those two goals play into maybe some of the goals that you have with our state and national elected partners, particularly as that, you know, this is a county that has a large concentration or had a large concentration of federal workers?
Yeah, I think everything is intertwined, right? Like, to the point, well, let's talk about federally first, right? We know, and specifically in the DMV, so Prince George's County is greatly impacted by the decisions that happen on the federal level, especially with, for the longest time, one of our biggest employers have always been the government and the federal government. And so when we start to see mass layoffs, when we're seeing the furlough happen, that puts a huge strain on our economy. The forecast that we see for foreclosures in the future, we're really worrying about flight, seeing an extreme flight of people moving to other jurisdictions, into the South and other areas for more stable workforce. So I think really stabilizing what we're seeing happening on the federal level is so crucial to the economy of Prince George's County. I think on the state level, the goal really is to see the type of investment that we need to build on our commercial base, to close the gap on the probably the concerns and issues that are top of mind. The governor just launched a grant program around childcare. It just speaks that this issue is one that we're seeing across the board. And so there's huge alignment. So I'm excited to see that. And my hope is to also work on legislation that bolsters our ability to incentivize commercial development. So we've asked the state to look at most of our, when we look at pilots and TIFs and our ability to have incentives, it's built around the housing market, right? And that's one of the concerns that we have in Prince George's County, that we're more of a bedroom community. We are the housing infrastructure for the region, not the employment infrastructure, not the destination. And so how do we build incentives for building restaurants, for building entertainment corridors? And so we went to the state to ask for more authority and flexibility to do just that. So I do think we have to work hand in hand with our state partners, with our federal partners, if we want to bring to fruition the ideas that we have about growing our economy.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And it appears that we have another caller. Caller, please tell us where you are from, your name, and your question for the council member.
Yes. Good Hello? Morning. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, caller.
Okay. Yes. Congratulations to the chair for her position. I'm in Brandywine, Maryland. Of course, PG County, and they're building like rezoned and building like crazy out here in Brandywine Road, et cetera. I'm a senior citizen, 77 years old, still hold a mortgage. My property taxes go up astronomically every year. I'm African American, of course, man. My question to you, Chair, what is being done? Because there is consciously or unconsciously, a land grab across America, and even in this area. I get letters monthly with of investors wanting to buy or purchase my property. I don't want to sell, but I can't keep afford the taxes. My taxes go, property taxes go up astronomically every year. And is anything being done by that? I know you're not in this area, but can you address that? Thank you.
Yeah. One, I think that's a huge concern. And so I just want to echo those sentiments that you're talking about in Brandywine, but I hear that concern across the county. I was one of the main people supporting with Councilmember Burroughs, the senior tax credit that we weren't able to bring to fruition because we know that our seniors need a break. And there is this battle that happens that I don't know if I've seen a jurisdiction figure out the right way to handle it. And this is what happens, and I'll use DC as a prime example, is that the community, and we all want to see development, right? We want to see better restaurants. We want to see better amenities come to our jurisdictions, right? And our communities. But when that happens, property taxes go up. And then gentrification happens because of just what you said. People are calling. People are like, I can't afford this. So they're selling at high rates. And then you have the entire economy shift. So all of that development that we wanted to build for the residents that live there end up becoming gentrification because those people can't even afford to live there anymore. So how do we balance developing our communities without displacing them? And property taxes has to be part of that conversation. It's the same reason why I supported and passed rent stabilization, because I was like, we can't see rents go up astronomically, right, as development happens, because all of those people are moved out of the community. And we have to figure out a way to do the same for property taxes, especially for our senior population. And
Is anybody putting forth legislation? Anybody having community meetings?
So we did put forth legislation on this before, and this is one of the concerns. It's always going to be paying for it. And that's why part of the solution is building the commercial tax base. Because the reality is that if we say, because what we want is a tax break, right, for our seniors, especially as the prices are going up and up and up. If we cut that without replacing it, the services are going to be cut. And so that's why, to me, I feel like shifting our revenue off of the backs of property taxes is the first thing that we have to do to really be able to remove the tax burden. And the problem is that for too long, the eye has only been set on development of housing and real estate. And right, until the county shifts, we're going to be in the same situation. And so myself, the new county executive, we all have a vision towards building commercial destination, expanding our tax base. And we have an opportunity with the Six Flags site. We have an opportunity with the stadium, and we have an opportunity with the Blue Line Corridor. And so if we do these right, then we are going to be able to shift the burden off of property taxes. And so that is being worked on actively right now. But that's the solution. The solution is that property taxes cannot be the number one revenue generator from the county.
Okay. Let me, one more question. All of these digital centers that are growing up across America, and some are in PG County, one is, I still work. I'm in my 70s. One is going up near one of my office where I work. All of these data centers, the PG County has had, in Largo, I think they had a couple of meetings. But what's the tax? Are they being taxed, these data centers, where all this information is being fed? I mean, it's in Maryland and Virginia, it's an astronomical amount of data centers being built. How can you address that with respect to a tax base?
Yeah, that's the conversation that's happening right now, right? Maryland, compared to like Virginia and some of our neighboring jurisdictions, we are night and day with the amount of data centers you have, right? You talk about hundreds in some areas of the country. And this has been the argument back and forth that is data centers the direct, some people feel that data centers are the solution to the tax base. Some people feel like it's not because it has a burden on our infrastructure. It's raising people's utility costs. We're not sure about the environmental factors. So right now there's a tug of war between if data centers are what we should bring to the county. We in no way, shape, or form have the number of data centers that our neighboring jurisdictions have yet. There's conversations now about what to do about data centers. But what you're saying is the exact way, the exact question that all elected officials are asking themselves and residents are asking themselves about the data center debate. When we talk about technology and the infrastructure to keep AI and all these things going, data centers will go somewhere. That's just a fact. The question is, where are there community benefits agreements? How do you make it safe? You know, how does it benefit the community? And those are the questions that we have to ask ourselves, because we've seen the mistakes that some of these jurisdictions have made when it comes to data centers, that it is draining the infrastructure, that it is, you know, concerns about polluting the environment, and that they were built too fast with no consideration for the community. Now, there's other cases where they're saying, well, it has fixed our deficit. And so right now is the debate about data centers. And within the next two to three years, you will see across the country, everywhere figuring out how to do it and do it right. Prince George's County, we had a task force. The state of Maryland is also doing a task force on data centers. So I applaud the leadership across this state that we're saying, let's not make the mistake of neighboring jurisdictions. Let's have a thoughtful conversation. Let's make sure if this comes that it is a benefit, that the revenue makes sense, that it's not a drain on our infrastructure, that it's not an environmental blight. Like, there's certain places in the country that make sure that they do it close to landfills, close to places that already have the infrastructure, but also are far from residential communities, so that it's less likely to have hazardous environmental impacts. So all those things will be talked about. All those things will be debated. But I am at the forefront of making sure that the residents are heard, that anything that comes to our community benefits our community, and that the tax burden shifts from our residents to industry.
Thank you for taking my call. But we're not going to let this go. As residents, I'm not going to let it go. I'm going to keep calling your office. I'm going to call to stay up, because they can't keep taking it from senior poor Black people.
I agree 100%.
Okay, so we actually, I do want to stay on the data center conversation, but we have another caller, and I want to respect our callers because this is community watch and comment. So caller, please tell us where you're from and your direct question to the county council chair, Crystal Orieva.
I guess you're talking to me?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I came on a little late. So first of all, I do own some property in Riverdale, Maryland. Investment in property taxes have gone through the roof. But that's not my real question. My question is, what is PG County and Maryland doing about the FBI not moving? Now, she might have addressed this earlier. Like I said, I came late. But what is their stance, or is there anything they can do? I just heard on the news they're moving down the street to the Ronald Reagan building. So how is that affecting the taxes? All right. Thank you.
No, thank you for the question. It was a huge blow. I mean, no one could say otherwise. We fought hard to bring the FBI here. It was an opportunity to create jobs, help build the economy in that community. And our leadership on the federal level, our congressmen, our senators have been fighting. They have not let go of the fight for FBI. and for the headquarters to be here. And so we stand in solidarity and support of our leaders on the federal level to not just roll over and let this happen. You know, this was a long process and we want it. And this administration, we have seen time and time again, they do not care about the law. They do not care about what's right. They are just punitive to any communities that they feel like look different than them, or they're not Republican, you know, jurisdictions. But we are going to fight. We're going to continue to fight. But we also have to look at the other opportunities before us, which are the stadium, which is Six Flags, the Blue Line Corridor funding of upwards of, you know, $400 million investment. And so we are going to keep on fighting for the FBI, but we have to also continue to fight for these other developments that are also in the pipeline.
Okay. So let's go back to the conversation around the data centers, because there has been, honestly, a lot of talk about, you know, a lot of the residents have come out and said, look, we don't want data centers. We don't care the financial profitability. We don't feel like that outweighs the destruction that it could cause, specifically into our environment, health concerns, property value. A lot of residents have been very strong in their opposition against data centers. And then coming to the county. And then, you know, along with that, you've seen that on the state level. States have been putting in legislation and things of that nature. And then we'll get to kind of how there is an executive order that stopped that. But for right now, can you tell us, walk us through the timeline and history of how Prince George's County came into this conversation around data centers?
Yeah. So this, to me, is just an example of why the community is so upset. Like, I get it. I get why the community is upset when there was probably one of the biggest opportunities for the community to be heard at a town hall with the task force. Even though I didn't serve on the task force, I came. You know, only three council members showed up. And, you know, it was the council members that probably were the most aligned with the community. But we wanted them to feel heard and seen. And, you know, I come from activism, so I get it. You want to show up, you want to disrupt, you want to yell, you want to make sure that your elected officials hear and see you. And I'm disgusted along with the community on what past leadership did. The reality is that when the past council member that represented that district, because we all know Landover is where the impetus of this issue arise with data centers in Prince George's County. And the former council member for that district, Jolene Ivey, had worked to pass legislation that would steamroll the process, that would make it so that if a data center came, it would not come before the council, right? It would go straight through planning and to the permitting process. Now,
wait, because you're giving us a timeline. So this is something that Councilmember Ivey was legislation that was put in place by Councilmember Ivey before you got on the council. I'm just trying to be clear on this.
Right. So Councilmember Ivey and other council members at that time, before I was elected, before Walla, you know, and any of us got to the council, right? And it's one of those bills that I'm sure they didn't publicize. It was on the agenda like everything else, right? But they did it with the intention of the community not really knowing what they're doing. Like, because I, for example, I host monthly meetings, you know, virtually, so my community can come and learn about every single bill that I'm doing. You know, I put it out on my social media. I put it out on my listserv. I want to make sure the community has the opportunity to talk to me about the legislation that I'm moving before it passes. That is not what happened here. You know, they put the bill out. The community did not know about it, right? And it passed. And so what happened is that
and we can, as the community, we can go back and look at that specific bill.
Exactly.
Right? So this is not something that you're saying and that we can't fact check ourselves.
Exactly. So anyone can go back, pull the bill number, watch the video and see how each council member voted at that time for this bill. Right. Okay. So that happens. And then there's also the reality of what happens. And this is what enraged the community. Right. what enraged the community is that the process cut out what the community feels like is their time, right? Because usually when there's a public hearing on the council, that's the time where the community really can engage, even though they can also engage during the planning process, but it's harder to know what's going on. Like, that's just, we have to be honest about the system, that it is harder for communities to understand and know what's happening when it's things are going before the planning board. It is easier for them to engage in front of the council. So that process was stripped out. Then what the community members saw and why they're so concerned is that then the learner company gave money to then those that council member. So they funded their campaign.
Because you're saying a lot of things and we want to make sure, where can someone fact check this? Because when you say things like this, it's like, oh, okay, are you just trying to shift blame onto someone else and not take accountability for your own actions within this? Like, where can someone fact check that that learners is connected to data centers and that any council member, whoever it is, got money from that particular organization? Where can we look that up?
So everyone has to post, every person that runs has to post our financial disclosure of who gave us money. So there is a website that you can go to. I can't think of the URL off the top of my head, but if you Google it, you know, financial disclosures, French George's County Council, and you can look up, each person has a campaign account. Usually it's friends of that person. But if you put in that person's name, you literally go in a search bar, put in that person's name, and you can see every single report, because by law, we need to, you know, we have to be very public about who's giving us money. And when you go there, because I saw this because the community showed this to me, right? Like, they did investigation and saw learners, right? And learners is the owner of the Landover site. And so this became the rallying cry for a lot of the activists about follow the money, right? What they say all the time. And the thing about me, yes, I'm an elected official. Yes, you know, I have to then wear that hat of being a politician, but I'm an activist at heart. And I'm never going to look at the community and say, you know, you're crazy for something we all can see plain as day, you know, that. And so I can understand why the community is upset, because if they see, here comes a bill, it's shifting all the responsibility out of the council, because the argument they're making is that there was an intentionality for council members wanting to fast track the process and keep their hands clean so that they could say, well, I didn't vote on the data center. But what you did was enable it. You enabled this process to happen. Then you see them giving money to those same people that passed that legislation. And then you see a data center that has gone through the planning process and now is off to permitting. And that's when the community finds out, right? And so the community finds out about this project. And what a lot of residents don't know is that when development's happening in the county, the way it works is that we sit as district council, right? So we sit at this as this quasi-judicial seat. And the rule of thumb is that the developers will meet with the district representative, and it's the district representative who then helps to coordinate communication with their residents, and that the other council members that represent different districts follow the lead of the person that represents that community, because it's called district courtesy. Because the thought is, they're elected to represent them. They're going to talk to their constituents. They're going to do their due diligence. So for other people that live in that represent different districts, they never came to us about this project. The only person they went to was the person that represented District 5. And that at that time was Jolene Ivey. And then the community felt completely blindsided. They get wind of something in the permit process. It never came before the council. And adding insult to injury to me is then that same council member is nowhere to be seen. They don't come before any of these town halls. They don't come before any of these meetings. You know, even though I had nothing to do with it, I wasn't elected at the time, because we sign up. We sign up to be in these rooms and hear from our constituents, and it's not always going to be pleasant. And I feel like it's shameful when elected officials do this type of thing to the community and then hide their hand and don't even show up to hear from them. And so I can't look at those people and say they're wrong for feeling how they feel. Like, I understand 100% how they feel.
Because the community is very outraged about yes. this. And I do want to focus. So you told us that this legislation was passed before you got on council, and then you get on council and other members get on council, and then there's a shift in the administration in context to Aisha Braveboy is now the county executive. What happens now in the timeline? Because right. now it's being brought to the forefront. And like you said, a lot of community activists are upset. They're mad. They don't want right. data centers in Prince George's County. Right. What happens in the timeline now?
Right. So when data centers were brought to us, right, there was
After you got on council.
This is after we got on council, after this bill had already been passed and it's law. They come to us about changing to make it. And at this point, we think this is a change that they're asking to make around data centers to make it easier. And the chair at that time, which is Chair Burrows, said he didn't want to do anything. He didn't want us to discuss data centers without a task force. And we all at that time agreed. We thought that made sense. We felt like we could not do this and enter this conversation without doing our due diligence of having a task force that included representatives from the community, from industry, from park and planning experts, and understanding this fully so that we can have a fair, honest, transparent conversation that had town halls, that had all these meetings. So we passed that legislation with the intention of that task force being the first step in this conversation, not knowing that there were people behind closed doors and back rooms moving the land oversight. So then once a new council member is elected, Shayla Adams Stafford, to represent District 5, she's then brought into understanding what's happening. Going back to what I said, once you're the district representative, you have insight of what's happening in your district more than if you don't represent that district. And the moment we all found out, we moved. We moved swiftly, and I commend the new county executive as well. We did legislation for the moratorium. The county executive did an executive order to halt what was happening. And we set forth to do what we always said we do, which is we needed to have an open, transparent conversation with the community. We needed to have the task force. We needed to wait for the report. You know, I have made it clear that I plan on repealing the legislation that Councilmember Ivy and others did to take the community and the council out of the process. I think it's bad legislation. And I will continue to be transparent about that. It'll be one of the first bills that I put forth come the new session.
So you are planning to repeal the bill that took the community out of having a voice and a say for data centers.
Exactly. Took it out of the hands of the council and the community having an opportunity. It has to be repealed. It is going to be a piece of legislation. Myself, Councilmember Begay, and I'm sure some of my other colleagues, you know, will join forces to repeal that legislation.
Okay. So then I also want to talk about this other thing that's happening on the national level, right? We saw an executive order from the President of the United States stopping states from enacting laws governing AI, which ties directly to data centers. So how can local municipalities protect their residents when the power has been taken away from the state?
Yeah, I think that This goes back to like all the things we need to fight, right? Like we have to continue to fight all of these executive orders, all of these overreach moves from this administration, because he doesn't care about the community, like at all. He doesn't care about the impact. He doesn't. It's a just position because in one stance they say everything should be decided by local jurisdictions. But unless it impacts somebody's wallet, I mean, that's what I'm hearing with this federal government, right? With this administration. So I think we can't lose sight of fighting and never getting tired of fighting because that's what they want. They want us to get fatigue. That's why every minute there's a new executive order. Every minute there's something that they're pushing the law and they have to be sued. But we cannot get tired. We have to continue to fight for every inch of authority that we should possess on the local and state level and fight against this tyranny of the administration. So I'll say that as like a first step that we have to do. And I think that we have to understand the powers that we have and how sometimes it's not that you're going to write a specific legislation and it's labeled AI, but you can regulate an industry in a way that impacts AI or impacts technology. And so I think we also have to get creative about how we address some of these issues. Sometimes it's not head on. Sometimes we have to take a back route. And I think we're going to have to think creative about a lot of our policy in ways in which we can still protect our communities.
Okay. Thank you for that. I know that my listeners have been calling, talking about, posting online, just everything around the data centers. And I think it's very important for them to hear like what actually happened, but also it's very important for people to fact check, right? Mm-hmm. I think that there is a lot of distrust in various ways. Yeah. And when people say certain things, it's, you know, it's incumbent upon them to say, well, this is what the truth is. And this is what I found to back it up. So yeah. I appreciate you saying where my listeners can go and fact check you. Because yeah. I think that they should.
Understood.
But let's talk 100%. About. Mm-hmm. But let's also talk about the shakeup that just has recently happened at the county council, with one member leaving mm-hmm. and then another member being moved to that member's position. And I've seen a lot of direct dialogue from my listeners about this. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's been a lot of conversation around the process, the procedures. And so, can you explain what happened and the procedures around it? Because there's a lot of like public discourse around feeling as though something wasn't followed, something mm-hmm. wasn't done correctly. And it's another game of just moving people around. So can you explain that to the residents?
Yeah. You know, I think we live in an age right now where anything is spread as being true. And like people might not dig into fact checking, like what you talked about earlier, and that's just the reality. And you know, as elected officials, you know, we might see comments, some we like and agree with, some we disagree with, but we also have to stay above it, right? So you don't really get involved with the back and forth. So I appreciate the ability to clarify this. The reality is that because some people think, okay, it should be an election or not. And the law is very clear about when it triggers a special election versus appointment process. We do not get to choose that as a body, right? And it is always triggered by the resignation of an individual, which again, as each individual representative has the right to step down if they so choose. Sometimes it's not, sometimes it could be nefarious reasons why people are leaving, sometimes personal. So the why is always changing, right? But at the end of the day, we as individual council members that were left do not have the decision making on the resignation, right? So the reality is we get a resignation, and then depending upon when the resignation is submitted, decides what the process will look like, if the process triggers a special election or not. So we all kind of lived through a special election recently, right? And I felt very strong. I was always public about I didn't think that that was the best option. I felt like, you know, we should have not cost taxpayers tens of millions of dollars to do a special election, that it would have been more fiscally responsible for it to be an appointment, especially given that there will be an election and we can make that decision on a ballot box, but we can't talk about having $147 million deficit and then have spent upwards of $10 million on special election. That's just my opinion.
So before you continue, just to clarify it. So when the county council members resign or move from their seat or run for a different, they know that the timeline impacts whether or not the community gets a special election, which can cost tens of millions of dollars, but also gives the community a chance to vote and have a conversation, or that it can be an appointment. And they know that timeline in relation to when another election that's going to happen on the regular schedule will happen. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Everyone's aware of the law, right? So it's very clear, you know, everyone knows it, I would think, or if you don't know it, you can look it up, right? Because it's not something we can arbitrarily decide. It is the law, right? I have always been public that I feel like, you know, you have to weigh all things, right? It's different. And I think the law was written in that way too. It's why it's not like if someone was to step down, for example, 1 year into a term, right? That's 3 years of representation. It's a long time before an election. The law is very clear that that has to be a special election. And that makes sense to me. You know, it's going to cost money, but it makes sense because that's a long time to have representation, you know, and it should be decided by voters. But then the law also says, well, there's a balance. For example, this situation with Councilmember Hawkins stepping down, there's the primary. And so we all know the decision's made really in the primary. You're talking about less than 6 months. So if there had been a special election, we're going to spend $10 million and then vote again in 6 months. Like, so I think that when the law was created, they tried to balance these two things about, we do need to make sure we go to voters. We need to have a special election if it's long representation. And then there's a reality of, like, if there's an election within months of each other, does it make sense to spend that additional money? And I think the lawmakers were thinking about that when they made this law. So that's the first myth, that this is like a decision that could have been made by any individual council member. It is not. It is what the law is. Then the second point to note is that the process is one that is not noted. Like, it has to be, you know, a clear process of what that appointment looks like does not exist in the law. So there's an intention to just and my colleagues, we did want an application process, right? Like, the way it works in the law, it just says we have to appoint. It could have just been walking to one day and appoint someone, right? I didn't think that that was right. I think that we should take applications. I think that it should be open. I think that we should have had a public hearing, which is what we did, allow every person to come and speak, allow for this open comment section, so any resident that wanted to speak could speak. And so I think, to me, it was very important that that process was like that. It's similar to what we see on the Central Committee. So the community has experienced that process many a times when delegates leave, right? There's a window, it's open, people can submit their resumes, they come before the body, they speak, and there's an election, right? That's the way it traditionally is done with the Central Committee. And so I think we tried to follow a model that, you know, the community has been through before. I was excited that we had so many people engaged. Over 30, you know, 8 people submitted their names, and, you know, wanted to serve in this capacity. And like all appointments or, you know, these kind of situations, you know, individuals speak offline and want to make phone calls and talk to the body and meet with them and to understand their vision. You know, so I'm sure that there's individuals that did that. And then we vote. And I think that Councilman Begay is someone I respect. I think she's been an amazing councilwoman representing District 6. I even respected her decision to not run in the special election at the time where she knew it would cost millions of dollars if she had to vacate her seat. So she wanted a position, but to me did the thoughtful thing and thought about the implications on taxes for people. And so I respect her judgment. And, you know, she was voted unanimously to take that seat.
Okay. So thank you for that clarification, because I know that my listeners had a lot of questions about the process, mm-hmm. and they did feel as though there was a taking away of the voice of them to be able to say something, to really be engaged. But now it's just kind of clear. And they did feel like the charter wasn't being followed. That was what I was seeing a lot online. And right. essentially what it is that the charter is, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, like, I think someone said, like, there wasn't a public hearing, but there was. So I just think that there's misinformation. Like, I think out of the 38, maybe 35 of the individuals came and testified before the body. So there's just a lot of people spreading lies intentionally because there was a hearing before the body.
But what you're saying is that the charter itself is essentially very vague on the process. It just says appoint someone. And what you're saying is that as the county council chair, you essentially created a process to have it be to where the public can engage with a public hearing and things of that nature. Is that what you're saying? I just want to be very clear.
Yeah, it could have been, like you said, like, could I have wielded it as chair and said, oh, we're just going to come in and appoint someone, we won't have a process? Yeah, I could have done that, but I don't believe in doing that, right? I talk to the members, you know, try to get a sense of the timeline and what people thought, try to make it inclusive of the members to have an opinion. But I was very clear that I wanted to look at other processes like the Central Committee and said, we need to at least have open application. We need to have everyone have the opportunity to come and speak before the body. We need to make sure that there's open comment for just community members to speak like always before the council. And then we can make a decision. But I wanted to make sure that it was transparent in a way that mirrored appointment processes that already exist.
Okay, and we're running out of time on Community Watch and Comment, and we had Crystal Orieva, chair of the County Council for Prince George's County. I did want to ask two more questions before we get out of here. What happens now to Councilmember Blagay's seat? She represents District 6. What happens to her seat?
It will be a similar process where it will be open for applications. There'll be a public hearing. Individuals will be able to speak before the council, and ultimately there'll be a vote.
Okay. All right. We literally have about a minute left, and I want to thank you for coming on. Again, this is County Council Chair Crystal Orieva, representative of District 7. I did want to give you a chance before we close out, if you wanted to say anything else to our listeners. A lot of them reside in Prince George's County, and they're very clear on what they want to know about how the county council is going to support them. If you wanted anything you wanted to say in regards to that before we leave out for today.
Yeah, I'm really excited about having a collaborative process. That is just the type of leader I want to be. So we will be announcing listening tours where we'll be going across the county to hear directly from constituents. We are also putting out a countywide survey about understanding the top issues, programs, things that we should be focusing on. And we're going to also be doing that during the budget process. So my style is one that we have to expand the table. And we have to make sure that the community has a voice at the table. I do surveys for my district. That's how I help to guide my strategy and principles for District 7. And my goal as chair is to spread that across the county. And my hope is that it's something that you might start with me, but other leaders continue to look at it that way, but that we can have community-based, collaborative, policymaking, budgeting priorities, and listening to the entire county when we're making decisions.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. That is going to do it for today's show. Thanks to Mike Nasella for his engineering expertise. And don't forget, the Blues with the amazing Lady Murr is coming up right now. I am Parker, and thank you so much for listening.
On Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight, WPFW presents Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist MLK and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic. From 9 a.m. until noon, we examine the Pan-Africanist legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. From noon until midnight, we center Haiti, her history, triumphs, troubles, and culture. That's Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist, MLK, and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic. Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight. WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings and happy holidays. The new year on WPFW will be celebrated in sonic bliss as some of your favorite programmers present the 2026 edition of New Year, New Jazz, our annual survey of the Jazz Year in Review 2025 on Thursday, January 1st from 5 a.m. until midnight. This day will present a delightful and potent mix of favorite 2025 jazz record releases, honoring jazz ancestors who passed in 2025, and music representative of our favorite 2025 DMV live jazz performances. That's Thursday, January 1st, 2026, New Year, New Jazz on WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. Don't sleep.
Fellow members and supporters of WPFW, as you contemplate your year-end giving, if you are required to take a minimum distribution from your IRA, please join many of our donors and make a qualified charitable distribution from your IRA to WPFW. A QCD can satisfy all or part of your RMD from your IRA, and you can exclude that amount from your taxable income. To learn more about these and other tax-wise giving methods, please visit our website or send us an email at plangiving@wpfw.org. And as always, thank you so much for your continued support.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and justice wherever you are.
I'm Wiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.